Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. Welcome to the show, everyone. On this episode, I have one of my closest friends hanging out with me today, and this guy is, I consider him one of the most gifted practitioners right now in the area of autoimmune. He's especially when it comes to individuals with PCOS and Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and those people who believe that some of their health dysfunctions are coming from past traumas. My friend, Justin Janoska. I want to tell you where you can connect with him, because I'm sure after listening to this, you're going to want to make sure that you follow him. If you go to Instagram, where Justin spends a lot of time educating, you can get him there at Justin Janoska, JustinJanoska, at Justin Janoska. You also can go over to his website, which is the Autoimmune Revolution. .com. And he has on his Instagram, by the way, he's got a link tree with a ton of stuff there, free programs for you, lots of videos and whiteboard tutorials and things like that. He is also the author of the book, The Flexible Dieting Disaster, which covers a lot of what we're going to cover in this particular conversation. Justin came down to Asheville, North Carolina, where I've been spending my time, and we got to have a chat, so I'm super excited for you to get a chance to connect with him and hear his thoughts. Make sure you go follow him, give him a shout out, and I will see you at the next episode. Enjoy this interview and discussion. What's up, everybody? Welcome to today's show. I have one of my closest friends on the show today, Justin Janoska. Many of you who have followed my work already probably know Justin, because he has taught with me, and he's also someone who teaches me an awful lot. We've been learning and teaching with each other back and forth for several years now. And he has a master's in nutrition, but one of the things that is most interesting to me about you, Justin, is that you have developed an expertise that I don't really think, I can't think of anyone else actually truly who has your expertise. And it has to do with this crosstalk between the nervous system and the immune system, and how that interacts with the endocrine system and leaves us susceptible to many different types of diseases, mood disorders and things like that, but especially autoimmune conditions. And this has been where you've kind of spent most of your time, and it's a really interesting area of science. It's an area of science that I always look to you to teach me on, and I wanted to have you on to basically cover this with everybody. You have a book out, The Flexible Dieting Disaster is Justin's book, and it covers a lot of this stuff, right, that we're going to cover today. Yeah. So any of you who are interested, and I know you're just going to be fascinated by this discussion, check out The Flexible Dieting Disaster with Justin. That book is available on Amazon, right?
Yep.
Go and grab that, because it goes into his work. So let's kind of start. I'll let you start wherever you want, but what I really feel like might be especially useful for people is – to just give them an idea of how the immune system works. Because I think as we get into this discussion, they're going to need to have a little bit of an understanding of how trauma and mental emotional stuff crosses over into immune function. So give us an idea of how all this works, just starting us with the general overview of the immune system.
Yeah, I mean, it's really complicated. And I think anybody would say that when they really spend enough time looking at the immune system. Mm. and I haven't figured it all out even myself, but there's been a lot of research on this stuff, especially in the context of autoimmunity and chronic disease and mental health disorders and even eating disorders and that sort of stuff, which is actually why I wrote the book, The Flexible Dieting Disaster, because I'm weaving in the issues around macros and flexible dieting and competing even, and how that connects to the immune system and also chronic disease and autoimmune disease as well. But anyway, I think that the most succinct way of explaining it is just that, you know, there are three basic arms as I look at it. You have the innate immune system, you have in the cell-mediated, and the adaptive. So you have your antibodies in the adaptive arm, you have the T cells and the cell-mediated, then you have the innate, which is like your first line of defense, which is actually, I think, where a lot of us are paying attention right now with the virus and natural killer cells and this and that, and exercise helps with that. But if we're really looking at how that changes, it's because of, well, to me, it's how stress really, obviously a lot of things have an impact on the immune system and what changes the volume, I would say, of different immune cells. And there's so many different types, right? And stress has a big role, in my opinion, it's the biggest regulator of those immune cells, because, and exercise does it too, and a lot of things, right? Meditation, things like that. But we're all dealing with a lot of stress right now, and I think that's why it's important to even kind of reemphasize that. But basically, things kind of go awry when you're dealing with chronic stress. You know, there is adrenaline, there's cortisol, these hormones that are basically signaling and trafficking these immune cells in a good way in some instances and not so good in others. Mm. And we could talk about that, but I mean, acute stress is one thing, but the chronic stress that goes on for years, and what I fear and think is going to happen is with 2020 and everything that's gone down, that's going to start the ball rolling for things to go wrong down the line. And that's where you're going to find these negative consequences with disease. And I said this earlier at the beginning of the pandemic. I said, you know, the acronym for 2020 is really PTSD.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No kidding.
But anyway.
Well, let me go back and see if I can give, because you know me, man, I always like to give sort of like a metaphor or an analogy or something like that. Right. So let's go through this real quick and see if I have this correct. So there's the innate immune system. This is what you call the first line of defense. Yeah. So as I think about this, I would think, if I'm thinking about this, let's say from, you know, the first responders in, you know, in a city, right? Yeah. This is kind of like the individuals who see and spot something that doesn't quite look right. So this might be the cops you call, or maybe even your next door neighbor who says, you know, I see smoke coming from a building or something like that. And it's sort of like the first people on the scene, right? So this would be like the foot cops, you know, the neighborhood watch, these kinds of individuals. And so then we have the sort of cell-mediated immunity and the adaptive immunity. So from my perspective, I would say, all right, now once we know, and I'm asking you to kind of correct me on this if it's not, but I would say once we know we have a neighborhood, let's say, that is, you know, a troubled neighborhood, we may end up having more patrols and things like that around, right? So this would be, you know, the foot soldiers talking to the detectives, talking to the SWAT patrol. This is sort of more like the cell mediated, where it's sort of like we need a little bit more help here, and we're going to communicate to other immune cells, which are going to do the job of taking care of business in a sense. Is that about right, or how would you correct?
And the antibodies
that?
Are like the long; they take a while to show up. They're the National Guard, right? They're coming across state lines, you know. And eventually, they come, and then they have a programming in them to deal with the next infection you have, for example. But
right, and that all takes time. So the innate immune system is pretty fast, right? This is, you know, just sort of general immune cells that can take care of business. Cell mediated is a little bit slower, and then the adaptive is a little bit slower but lasts longer. So next time you see this, you're able to handle it better. And so immunoglobulins, antibodies, come from the adaptive immune system. They remember things. And the other ones are sort of like the short-term sort of battle sort of going on. So one of the things we've seen with COVID, I know we're not going to talk about that, though, is we don't know how long we make this adaptive response and how long it will last before the immune system has to go back to its sort of regular sort of surveillance and, and things like that. So if we all have an idea of that, now you talked about this idea of stress. And I know people get a little bit confused with stress, but it's something you and I deal with a ton. Anything that in my mind, it throws the metabolism, which by the way, when I say metabolism, I mean the nervous system, the immune system, the endocrine system, and all of it. But anything that throws the metabolism out of balance is a stress. And when the metabolism is constantly being thrown out of balance, it has negative consequences on the immune system. So run us through what might be an example of how this begins to happen. If I'm an individual who's under chronic stress, and what kind of stresses that you would think would be most, you know, sort of prevalent, that then all of a sudden my immune system starts dealing with issues.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. There are a lot of things, a lot of triggers that could be stressful, right? Quote unquote stressful. And I think, yeah, that's all valid and true. The sun, the climate, the toxin, whatever. But for me, it's the psychological stress that kind of is severely underrecognized and overlooked, I think. And we know about it, but a lot of us don't. I think we kind of brush it off and think it's not a big deal or it doesn't really have an impact, but it does actually. And the research has made it very, very clear. And that's really the insidious problem, growing problem, I think, with chronic disease as a whole, but particularly in autoimmune disease, because that's what I spend my time with the most, working with people, you know.
So what would an example be? I know you deal a lot with trauma. So let's say I'm someone who had mental, physical, or emotional abuse as a kid, let's say.
Yeah.
And this was something that I dealt with. And it seems like what your work essentially says is if that is something that you've gone through as a child, it's going to essentially prime you to be extra, you know, sort of reactive or especially susceptible to certain things. So walk us through how that works, because at first, I think you're right. People, it's under-recognized because people, I mean, they kind of have a sense these things are linked. But what is the mechanisms, if any, or a way for us to be thinking about this?
Yeah, it's really interesting because when you go through like an acute stress response that's psychological, like, you know, somebody hit your car or, you know, your vote didn't get mailed in.
That's right. We just had the vote, by the way, as we're doing this podcast.
You know, whatever that is. And you freak out, you have anger, you have resentment, anxiety, whatever that is. There is changes in immune system in those three arms we talked about. And like, for example, like the natural killer cells in the innate arm goes up. And then it goes down. And then the T cells go down as well eventually. And exercise actually does the same thing, right? It increases natural killer cells, which is great because that's your dealing with viruses, a lot of things like that, which is why, ironically, we want to exercise, right? We haven't been able to do it very well lately. But yeah, getting that up is great. And then what happens is that there's a big shift. And like I said earlier, there's re-trafficking, there's different, the immune cells respond don't respond to the cortisol and the adrenaline that's coming through the body with chronic stress. And this is why it's hard to pick out because a lot of us are dealing with it in a way where it's buried subconsciously. We've forgotten about it. We numbed it out because that's how we survived, right? We have to cope with it somehow. And that's where we can see this stuff on even immune panels. You can run a TMB cell profile and see actually what's happening. But still, I mean, you can find that the overall, what happens with long-term stress, I mean, it's different because all the research kind of hints at the same thing, but there's different, it's not very, very clear. It's like some immune cells are looking like this, some look like that, right? Cortisol does this and that. But generally speaking, what I found is that chronic unrelenting stress is really, it's decreasing natural killer cells, it's decreasing T regulatory cells, which are really important, especially in autoimmunity. So if you don't have them, you're in deep trouble a little bit. It's also knocking down TH1 cells, right? Dendritic cells too. That's another part of the innate immune system. And what happens is that the macrophages are the ones that seem to be resistant to cortisol. So, you know, we talk about stress and cortisol and how it stops the inflammation, right? It suppresses immunity, which is true, right? You obviously give that as a drug. But it actually does the opposite long term. It actually increases cortisol or inflammation, right? Because the macrophages are resistant to it and they're just perpetuating the inflammation and the whatever the issue that's going on. So you end up in a pro-inflammatory state, and that's where you run into a lot of issues. And we can see this across many different contexts with trauma, because childhood abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional neglect, relational trauma, whatever that is, bereavement, death, bullying, it creates all these really adverse and unfavorable consequences with the immune cells, and inflammation is really high. We can even find CRP levels being high 20 years later after you've been abused. I mean, that's what we see.
And for those who don't know, CRP is one of the chief measures of inflammation that we use to measure to see if you're inflamed. So let me walk through a little bit of this to see if I understand. So let's imagine, and just tell me if this is a good analogy. I mean, we kind of have some context. I'm in North Carolina now. We're sitting here talking, but I was just in LA, and for a period of time in Los Angeles this year, we had COVID going on. We had extreme fires everywhere. We had riots happening. Mm-hmm. And essentially, if we look at this as the immune system is trying to deal with all of these things. That would be like your extreme stress. This would be like being bullied, being neglected at home, and I don't know, being physically or sexually abused somewhere else, right? Yeah. You got all this stuff sort of happening. So this is what was going on in Los Angeles. And one of the things that they began to talk about was this idea that, okay, we don't have enough cops in certain neighborhoods all of a sudden because they're all, you know, down in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're pulling people from Hollywood and they're pulling people from Venice and they're pulling cops all into Santa Monica. Yeah. And at the same time, we don't have enough firefighters in any of those neighborhoods because they're all up in Ventura County fighting the immune fire, in a sense, up there. And then you have COVID and all the first responders sort of responding to that. And all of a sudden, you're sort of like, well, the city and our ability to respond in general starts to become compromised. And so I'm kind of seeing this as what's happening now. What's fascinating about this is what it sounds like you're saying is it's not even that bad, Jade. It's that once that happens, even when the fires stop and the riots stop and COVID clears, your immune system still seems to, for long periods of time, and I want to ask you how long, still seems to be maladapted. And so all of a sudden, you still don't have the cops you need on the street. You still don't have the firefighters you need on the street. And you still don't have the sort of nurses and doctors and EMT that you need there. It's almost as if this extreme stress for this short point of time in your childhood or anywhere else causes these negative consequences that last for years and years. And if this is what you're saying, then how long does this last? This is a forever thing, and what mainly do we see other than this pro-inflammatory state?
Yeah, it's hard to know, right? We're looking at big group cohort studies, we're not actually checking all the immune cells and things that I would be doing with the client anyway, right? So from a generalized standpoint, we can kind of conclude that, it goes on for a long time. And you may never know it. And people say to me all the time, I don't have stress, I had a great childhood, everything was great, my parents were nice, I got good grades, whatever. And that might be true, awesome, but they may go through an experience and not realize it's actually leaving like a pretty indelible mark on their system. And that's shown up behaviorally. They're not, they're reacting to it in some other way. It's unconscious, but the troubling thing is that this is what happens with trauma. Like when you go through something like that, you're not really sure what to do.
So let's go back to this idea. If the immune system, so you were talking about this idea of it's sort of like PTSD, right? So it's almost like I would describe it as almost like, from what you're saying, post-traumatic immune suppression or post-traumatic immune dysfunction. And so if this essentially is happening where one trauma in our lives can then create a suppressed or dysfunctional, and because I know you're talking about sometimes you're having one area of the immune system that might be hypervigilant and another area of the immune system that's not responding. How long does this last, and what are sort of the major sort of consequences of that? Do we know?
Yeah. So there's this like term called biological embedding, they call it, where, as you can probably assume yourself, Jade, is like there is this dysregulation of the HPA axis, right? Your hypothalamus to pituitary and the adrenal, that whole axis. But there's like hypersensitivity that goes on, and there are changes in the brain as well that we can even talk about, and that's doesn't always happen, but people would be surprised to know that their amygdala, kind of their hippocampus, shrinks. You've been sexually abused, we can find out that your brain is actually changing.
Yeah, two areas where centers emotion, the other one has to do with memory.
So. Yeah, right, and other parts too. But this biological embedding just really means that you have a heightened stress response, and you're not going to know because you may not really feel it, right? It might just be your new normal, right? And then it's just part of your life. And that's why it's hard for people to discern whether or not it's really an issue. But if you do panels and you look at cortisol levels and your cortisol awakening response, it's not going to be pretty probably. And that's what's confusing, is that the research shows like it's really, really high. It's really, really low. I have a client of mine who's has Hashimoto's. She was abused, molested 15 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think it's still, and here's an example of what I mean. She's still living with it because her body's still perceiving that stress because she has, we recently looked at her cortisol. It's flatlined. Mm-hmm. It's like bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. That's how I know. But conversely, we can see that people have the opposite, and they're really high. PTSD usually has a low cortisol pattern, but and then what happens in between with the immune system, that we're not going to really know, and that's why the studies haven't really kind of vetted that all out completely. But we find mostly that there's just heightened pro-inflammatory cytokines, interleukin beta, IL-6, et cetera.
And we don't really know how long it's lasting. And just to drive this home for you listeners, here's the way I see this to make it, sort of a little bit more tangible for everyone. Imagine if you had someone break into your house 10 years ago and steal a bunch of stuff and, beat up your significant other or something. It was a traumatic event. And then what happens is you're waking up every night in the middle of the night, stressed out, remembering this effect. It lives in your body, and you're hypervigilant, thinking someone else is breaking in with every little creak and every little sound and every little thing that happens. You're jumping out of bed, and you're in this hyper sort of vigilant state. Now imagine your immune system doing something similar, where certain parts of the immune system are overreactive, other parts of the immune system are underreactive, and this is where we get into sort of this autoimmune type condition. Now imagine that every time you heard a sound, you jumped up, grabbed your gun, and just started shooting holes in the wall, right?
Yeah.
Then you're essentially disrupting your own tissues. And this is the way I have always seen this, but I want to see if you think, Jay, this is a good analogy for this, because essentially what happens is certain areas start going haywire. You can't regulate it. And now other tissues that you need, such as the thyroid gland, which you mentioned, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, for those of you who don't know, that's an autoimmune condition of the thyroid gland. And now all of a sudden, the immune system, because of this post-traumatic immune dysfunction, let's call it, starts to behave in ways that do not serve us and start to negatively impact the metabolism. And so what are all the things that can go wrong then, right? Because then you think about the thyroid is an organ that does everything. So walk us through how you see that. Is that a useful way to think about it? And what are other things that I'm missing there in terms of function?
Yeah. I mean, basically what I see, and I talk about this a lot, is when you've gone through a stressful event that primes your nervous system and the HP axis and all that, the immune system starts to get dysregulated, but then you get faced with more stressors, like in 2020, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And till the end of time, and you have a hard time really down regulating, your immune system, and that's why I say that you can't just diet, supplement, and medicate your way out of autoimmune disease. Because if it were that simple, you'd be a lot better. But it's because of things like this, right? Because there's obviously a dysfunctional immune system. That's the crux of autoimmunity. So if you don't balance that out, it doesn't really matter how many times you change your diet.
Oh, dude. So I love this, and this gets us to the thing that I think everyone. Yeah. I mean, the mechanism's fascinating, but I think. This gets us to the thing that I think everyone wants to know. Okay, Justin Jade, so then what do we do? So essentially if you guys are listening to what Justin said, he goes, okay, this can cause autoimmune conditions, dysfunctional immune system, but we don't know how long it lasts. And he's also saying that guess what doesn't fix it necessarily? Supplements, diet, exercising. And sometimes those things can make it even worse because they can become a stress in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. So what have you found in the research that are the things that we can do? I'm imagining it has something to do with taking this alert system off the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, thyroid, gonadal axis. But walk us through what should someone be doing then? Obviously, we have to deal with this trauma in some way.
And that's how I look at it. That's the root cause of the other issues, that you're really at the end of the day, the autoimmune disease. I mean, the symptoms and pain really provide the source of where the healing is, and that's the events and the experiences you went through as an early adult or even a kid, right? It's not just, you don't have to be a young kid to go through anything. It can happen at any point in time. So there's that part where you got to deal with that. And that's a lot of the stuff I do with mindfulness and that sort of thing. But, you know, we want to do that. But we also simultaneously want to do things like maybe low dose naltrexone and turmeric and immunosuppressant drugs and nutraceuticals and, you know, adaptogens. Those things are fine and great, but I think they're, you know, I don't know about you, but I think they're entirely overused. And we put a lot of weight on it thinking it's going to just magically fix everything. But I can tell you what, you can take all the ashwagandha you want in the world, but if you haven't actually dealt with the pain and trauma, it's completely set you backwards. It's going to be like two steps forward, one step back. It's going
or
to be
driving
like,
down the highway with your parking brake on or something like that.
Like try to put out a fire, but you're also simultaneously putting more wood in the fire. Yep. It's like you're spinning your wheels. And
one of the ones I use is trying to bail out the Titanic with a Dixie cup. It's just not, yeah. It's not going to be enough, right?
Yeah. Right.
So to walk us through then, because I know you don't, you know, mindfulness stuff is tricky, but it sounds like that's where a lot of this has to happen. I mean, in a sense, if you can get that right, if you can reverse some of that trauma in the brain, the way the brain remembers this or perceives mm-hmm. this, then maybe some of these natural therapies work better. And maybe that's why actually they work for some and not others. Maybe there's some trick there that certain people's brains are making sense of this trauma in a way that other people's brains are not. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you found there.
On mindfulness? We know that it definitely has favorable changes on the brain. It actually reverses a lot of what trauma does, where it decreases gray matter in the amygdala, it increases it in the prefrontal cortex. It reverses the damage that happens with trauma on the amygdala, right? And that's all great stuff. We want that. And then even on the immune system side, all those patterns of inflammation and the markers we talked about earlier, those can shift easily too. Cortisol can get renormalized. It just takes a long ass time.
So with mindfulness, what are we exactly talking? Is this like, are you essentially saying, you're saying, hey, look, Jay, my clients, what I do is, I give them naltrexone and ashwagandha and other things like that if it's required, but I'm also having them go through meditative training.
We do both. It's not either or.
Okay, so it's both always.
Yeah, because we still need a quick fix sort of thing to get the ball rolling and get their cortisol under control. Because I can tell you what, if you have an autoimmune disease, I mean, if cortisol is too high or too low, both of it is an issue. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a real tough time getting your immune system under control, right? It's because, you know, you think about it, right? If you're in a chronic inflammatory state, your cortisol patterns might be high. And they might be low, but you can also acquire new infections when it's low, you know, or high. And then guess what? It's another trigger to your system. And so it doesn't really slow down and stop. So that has to get, you know, the hormones have a huge role in all this, obviously. But
yeah, I often call cortisol the Jekyll and Hyde hormone.
Yeah,
exactly. Like you guys know that story of Dr. Jekyll, yeah. Mr. Hyde. Dr. Jekyll's this, you know, upstanding citizen and like, you know, good person. And then he's got this alter ego, Mr. Hyde, that goes out and kills people and is just crazy.
Yeah.
And it, essentially cortisol is like this. It can really work for you or can work against you. We really need that Goldilocks sort of effect here. And so I'm just curious because for me, when I go mindfulness, I mean, that could mean journaling. That can mean meditation. That can mean just, you know, one of my favorite mindfulness techniques is to go for a walk in nature. And it's sort of like walking meditation. Yeah. Guided meditation does it. So you're saying all of these things potentially work.
Yeah. So doing things that, you know, instantaneously just slow down your nervous system, calm it down, and cortisol and things like that. But what I'm talking about even also that's more profound is going deeper and actually facing the wounds and pains. And that's a choice you have to make. And that's why we can talk about all the treatments and modalities and interventions that are out there. But if you're not willing to face it, that's the choice you have to make, then it's irrelevant. And that's what I make clear to everybody. It's like, it has to start with you. It's not your job or my job or anyone else's job to make you face that. But, you know, you're not going to just fix it and undo, unburden, decondition just by taking an herb, you know?
And how do people do that? What have you found in terms of, there's lots of different techniques out there. There's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this. I'm just wondering, what is your go-to technique,
well,
you know, here?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with those sort of therapies that like Reiki and hypnotherapy and EMDR and QNRT, whatever, but those are fine. But the thing that has to precede that is awareness and consciousness and seeing the truth of your story and what happened. And if you don't do that and you go into something where you work with a therapist or whoever, and it has the intention of, you know, it's what we do, but it's also why and what's the intention. If the intention is to fix you and pull it out of you, well, that's the problem. There's nothing to fix. There's only healing that needs to take place.
Yeah.
And so you know, that's why we can do that stuff to help uncover the layers, I think, that are burying the pain you've kind of numbed out, because it's what we do usually, which is and it's why it's difficult to remember this stuff. People are like, I don't remember it, because you know why? Because your cingulate cortex fused with your amygdala, and that's the fear-based kind of response that happens, but also your hippocampus gets damaged, so you don't remember much, and you also numb it out as a way to survive. So yeah. It's like, that's why you don't remember things sometimes.
Yeah.
So you have to do these therapies, like, you know, tapping or EFT, whatever, EMDR, to kind of get it out to your awareness. That might be helpful, but at the end of the day, what I'm doing with people is like trying to get them to face it with new intentions, with compassion, right? Forgiveness, acceptance, letting go, non-judging. And it's a lot. It's actually easy to talk about in just like this in terms of what we're doing conceptually, but it's really, really, really hard to do.
Yeah, it's one of these
and
things.
It takes
that you
a
have
lot
to...
of time to really retrain your brain. It's all neuroplasticity. That's all it is.
Yeah, and it is one of these things that if you're listening to this and you're feeling frustrated about, I don't know all these acronyms and things like this. All these acronyms, you know, they're just different tool sets. Like EMDR is using sort of eye movements and certain phrases and things like this that reprogram the way mm-hmm. you perceive certain events. And so definitely go and look those up. But all Justin is pointing out is there's lots of different techniques that have been used for this. What he is essentially pointing to us is saying that perhaps the most important thing that comes before that is essentially facing your fear. And actually, I'm going to walk you through, I think the book is called Rewrite. And I did a bunch of big dive into this. And I don't actually think you and I have talked about this. So I want to get your take on this. I did a big deep dive on this probably 10 years back. And basically it was PTSD. This was done on soldiers. And what they did with the soldiers, they saw a couple things. If you took these soldiers who had PTSD, you know, had these traumatic events in war, and you started to get them to talk about the event too soon, the PTSD actually got worse. Mm-hmm. And then what they started to do is they said, well, what we want to do is not talk about the process right away. We want to give them a little bit time for that, for them just to feel things, right? So during this time, they were doing things like just walking, just movement, not really thinking too much about it. But then they took them in and did what they call a story edit. And this story edit essentially works like this. And I want to get your take on this to see if this is similar to what you would do or you would agree or disagree with this. What a story edit does is essentially says, has these soldiers write down the event, right? So like, let's say it happened August 10th in 2000 or whatever. And they write down the exact event. I was doing this. I was out on the patrol. Next thing I know, something happens. We're taking fire. And they write it exactly as it occurs. Mm-hmm. And then they get right up to the present day. And then they have to write into the future and describe for themselves how this event was positive, taught them something, mm-hmm. or how they made sense of it. It's almost like they're their own movie producer and director writing a movie yeah. with the facts, and then they do the turnaround. And we all know in a movie there's always a hero's journey, there's always a turnaround and sort of an insight. So they're trying to give them their story, plot, meaning, insight, so they can use it to get better. And this seemed to help with PTSD. So now I'm wondering, do you think something like this would help for what we're calling in this episode post-traumatic immune dysfunction and yeah. all the stuff that goes along with it? Would this be along the lines of what you've seen in your clients? Do you think this makes sense to you and it would be useful?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's essentially what I'm doing. Narrative medicine. That's where it starts.
Okay.
Tell me your story.
I love that. Narrative medicine.
Yeah.
So walk us through briefly how that would work.
That's like essentially what you just said. I mean, that's and I didn't make that term up. That's how I learned it. But my mentors. But yeah, I mean, it's like, tell me everything that happened in your life. Not maybe in this particular situation with the war that you're talking about in that context, but just everything that you could think about. You may forget some stuff, but to the best of your ability, just tell me everything that happened. And I can't tell you how many times people do that, and they're like, "Oh wow, I forgot about this. I knew this. You know, I didn't realize this happened in the way I wrote it. Whatever." And that's awareness. That's where it begins, right? And then everything that comes after that, how to work with that in a way that's wise, right? That's the challenge, really. But I think what you said about predicting, or you said writing about what the future would look like with the veterans, so. That's I'm not doing that, but yeah, I mean, you talk about this all the time. It's like there's an opportunity here, there's a learning, something to learn about from this. How can I transform it into that pain into a journey of healing and awakening and use it for a greater purpose? And that's hard. You know, I think people just, and that's not anything I'm trying to help them do necessarily or tell them what to do, but they figure it out on their own. That's sort of the insight that comes from it. You know, one of my coaches on my team now was one of my clients, and she essentially did that because she went through a lot of, she grew up in an alcoholic family, right? There's a lot of need for control in those situations, being a workaholic, along with all the emotions with that. But after she got through all this, she essentially decided to be a coach and help people with the stuff in autoimmunity. That's an example, I think, of what you would do with that sort of pain.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is really interesting, right? Because you're saying, well, yeah, Jade, it sounds like this is what you're saying. You say, yes, absolutely, that works. But first comes the awareness, mm-hmm. and many people will not talk about the events to even get to the awareness. So it sounds like your process is a lot about, let's go through and remind ourselves of how you got here. Like, what are the things that have happened that you have kind of pushed aside, right? And mm-hmm. I think it's really important. Some of these things can be so incredibly traumatic, but it sounds like most of your work, and I certainly would say I've seen this in my clinical work too, that the awareness probably is most of the battle, because once you get the awareness, oh, this is what has happened, this is how I responded to it, and maybe if I could see this a different way or begin to think about this in a different way, I can begin to turn that stuff around. Then all of a sudden, perhaps, now, you know, all these mechanisms that you're talking about with cortisol and everything else, mm-hmm. you start to kind of, your system starts to relax, for lack of a better term, and the, you know, the fires up north are gone, the riots are gone, COVID's slowing down. And now you essentially go, okay, now I can take stock of all that, mm-hmm. learn what I needed to learn. And that begins to perhaps calm the system down. And now maybe ashwagandha will help the hypothalamus pituitary connections get back online. And it sounds like this is exactly what you're saying and pointing to.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention about the awareness thing is that that's the first step. First is choice, then awareness, then the insight comes later. That's kind of the model I've thought about in my head. But what I was trying to say is that it starts with a quiet mind, because when the mind is still and tranquil and not seeking an answer or solution to this problem, which I'm not doing. And so when you're not seeking an answer or solution, nor are you avoiding or resisting, is when there can be truly regeneration of the mind, because the mind is incapable of perceiving the truth, and it's the truth that liberates, not the effort to be free. And that's where it comes from. And that's how I look at it. And a lot of people can be free from that truth, and there's not a lot that has to happen, but it's not always the case.
So this is fascinating. My final thought that I want to see what your thing on. So obviously now you wrote this book, The Flexible Dieting Disaster. And so I guess the thing that I want to ask you, and I think this will kind of bring us full circle, mm-hmm. is that, so is your contention that these people, many of us, are walking around with these wounds, either in childhood or through adulthood, and then we do things like become obsessive about diet or exercise as a way to try to exert some control over something. So we might become obsessive and anchor to that, and that doesn't solve the trauma underlying. In fact, it's completely avoiding it. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, that also can add stress to the system just metabolically if you're, you know, eating less and exercising more. And it sounds like it do I have that right in terms of the work that you're actually doing, that that's why you think that sometimes diet and exercise and going to the extreme with the way the diet world does, mm-hmm. is problematic because it's covering up the major issue?
Not for everybody, of course, but it's the one area that I think that has not been addressed. I mean, you could tell me if you know anybody who's touched on this, but mm-hmm. That's why I did it, because I am trying to just gently, I think it's triggering for some people, mm-hmm. and provoking. Generally, though, I think that this is something that's happening all the time, and no one's realizing it. And yeah, people are doing competitions. I one thing I said in the book, and this is going to annoy some people, is that I think there are a lot of people that are wounded children on stage. Mm. And I'm not saying that's the case of everybody. You know, one of my friends is great. She's an NPC competitor herself, but I know she's doing it for the right reasons. Mm. And I know a lot of people are doing that too. But all I'm saying is that there's definitely a lot of people that are doing it for reasons to find achievement, acknowledgement, worthiness, when they're, you know, there were some unfilled gaps because of some experience they went through. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just how you're dealing with it.
Yeah.
But the only way you're going to break that pattern and then subsequently stop the disease or the PCOS that comes as a result of doing that, which I have clients who have been down that whole entire path, which is why I connect that autoimmune stuff to it. You're not going to heal that disease, nor are you going to get through the or stop the self-defeating, self-sabotage patterns that you think are serving you until you work with the pain in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's this is just, by the way, for those of you who didn't catch what Justin is saying, when he talks about being on stage, there's a whole group and a whole sort of underground group of individuals who get extremely lean and do these extreme diets and exercise so that they can get on stage and show off their physique. And so that's essentially who he's pointing to. And it's really interesting because all of that, perhaps in some people, and who knows how many, I certainly can see some aspects even of myself in my younger bodybuilding days where I had some of this stuff going on. And I think it's really interesting if you're someone listening to this and you've been doing all the diet and exercise stuff and obsessing over that, and you have traumas, which we all do, and you're not seeing the results from that, and or especially you're dealing with some of these immune conditions, this is something you must look at. And I assume, I'm assuming most of this is in the book, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that I've not done is there are no studies that talk about this. I've looked, and unless you find something, let me know. But I hope one day there will be something that talks about something related to trauma, stress, and dieting, and the fitness, world and bodybuilding, whatever, and just seeing some parallels. But I can tell you anecdotally and with clients that definitely is a real thing.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's randomized controlled trials on it, but we do know that in the last 20 years or so, there's a reason we now say psycho, neuro, endocrine, immune system, because the science, the basic science and the way this happens and these connections happen is absolutely there. We don't yet know to what degree and what conditions may be. I know you work with PCOS and Hashimoto, so you see it a lot in those conditions, but we don't yet know the specifics yet. And, but it's fascinating, bro, and thanks for enlightening us on that.
Yeah.
And I love you, homie. You're a genius.
Cool. Thank
thanks
you,
for
man.
Hanging out
Appreciate
with us.
It.